Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake Gibb. You're in the net live.
This is Taiba Hanif Park, and you are in the net live.
Aloha, this is Mike Lambert, and you are in the net live.
Loy Ball, and you're on the net live.
Rhyme Alarm, and you're in the net live.
Hey, this is Heather Ballin, and you're live in the net. Nope, that was totally wrong.
Hey, this is Karj Kira, and you're in the net live with Willie and Barney.
It is the net live. It's not a Monday, it's a Tuesday. We're here once again in the home court. Geeter in the sun, sporting a fancy new hat over there.
Vala Entertainment.
Vala, DJ Roche in the house once again. Brought some swag. That's always a good way to get yourself back in the show.
The Jay Roche.
Yeah.
Oh, I brought my own sound effect.
Nice.
How do people get this kind of gear?
ValaClothing.com. V-A-L-A clothing.com.
Will they look half as good as you if they put it on?
There's only one way to find out.
Yeah. If they get an armband, then they'll be okay. You got to get a big, nice tattoo on your right arm.
Your arm, yeah.
Then you'll look like DJ Roche.
Barney, do you think people joined the show yesterday, logged on, tried to get in, and were devastated?
We tried to make it clear that we were going to be on Tuesday, but inevitably somebody calls me. In this case, it was Rosenthal, who should know when we're on. He said, how was the show? I go, dude,
come on.
We're on tomorrow.
Ugh.
Oh, good, I haven't missed it. Yeah, come on, dude. You're like part of the show. You have to know when it's on.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show, yeah. Occasional Geeter substitute.
Yes, he does a good job.
That's what it is. He used to be a co-host. Now he's just subbing for Geeter.
I'm finally kind of on the main page. Finally got a seat, Jay Roche.
You're kind of a big deal.
Reed, how you doing, bud?
You're like our Regis.
I'm hanging in there. Regis taking a step down, by the way.
That's right. He's out.
So, guys, my wife and I had a 45-minute conversation about hanging in there. When people ask me how I'm doing, I say, I'm hanging in there. Does that mean you're doing okay, Reed? Here's what I told her. It doesn't mean I'm off the charts great. Doesn't mean I'm bad. I'm steady Freddy. Hanging in there. But then I think it's your tone. I'm hanging in there.
Didn't we get an email this week about somebody just trying to hang in there and needing a pump-up speech from you?
Exactly. If you're just hanging in there, I can get you to, I'm feeling good.
That's right. Our friend Matt Gardhoff, he's been hitting CrossFit, feeling a little bummed out.
He's just hanging in there.
Yeah. He needs something from you over some DJ Roche music. I think that's going
to
be
right. I sent the link of Matt Gardhoff's skits with the dolls to Todd Rogers because Todd's going to be our guest today, and he just viewed them. So we'll have to ask Todd about what he thinks when he sees that doll with goatee.
Professor?
Sounds just like him, the professor.
Professor? How do you feel about your doll? Well, Geeter just mentioned it. We do have Todd Rogers coming on the program today. He's going to give us a little bit of info here on 2011 and the beach scene. We also have Jordan Larson live from Russia. We're going to have two people from Russia on the show at the very same time, keeping that SoCal to Siberia feel. But Jordan Larson, Nebraska All-American and current starter for the U.S. Olympic team. Women's team.
She brings gas.
Absolutely.
Jay Roche just looked at me. I might have came out wrong. She brings heat with that live arm of hers. How about that?
I just love her attitude.
She hits way harder, and I got to ask Reed this, harder than Barnett in his heyday?
Oh, yeah.
She's better than
Of course.
Barnett? Okay.
That's not even a question. And she also has a pretty insane forearm on the ping pong table, so we'll have to...
Terrible backhand.
But no backhand, though, yeah.
Well, we have those guests, and we also have DJ Roche right here spinning some tunes, interjecting some personality. We're going to see how many times he pumps himself up. Every time I mention him, he should just say the best DJ in the land.
Every clip is going to be about me.
Yeah. You know what's funny is you just said the word personality. And I think at the end of 2010, people said, yeah, there's one knock on your show. We need a little more personality. So, Jay Roche, you're it.
And I'm Mr. Personality, by the way.
Yeah.
But that's what everybody says about me.
And not a lot will come out, but when it does, it's quality.
No pressure. We've got the ABC College Volleyball Weekly starting up for the men's side. We have Mike Sondheimer from UCLA. We have Rob Aspiro from UCI. And we have Jay Hossick from Penn State all coming on to inform us about what's been going on in the men's world.
You love the men. Reed loves it. I love it. We get excited. does the rest of the volleyball world get excited when the men's season starts? I don't think it doesn't have the same energy level that it does in August when the women are starting.
I think it's just because there aren't so many teams. You're talking 24 teams,
yeah.
20, maybe no 34 question. Teams by the time you took into almost NAIA. So it's not quite the same, but I think it ought to be the same. I think it's a great game. I think there's plenty going on, lots of great stories and people to talk to and about. I don't see the difference except for the numbers.
Reed,
we talked about that last week's show, why that is with the scholarship.
I agree. Reed, why can't ESPN do a game of the week for the men, especially in the springtime? There's only baseball, there's softball, there's track and field. There's not a lot of sports viewing shows out there. Hoops ends in early April. Why can't we have an ESPN game of the week? You guys ever thought about that?
I mean, isn't that the question? We're always asking why ESPN isn't stepping up to the plate for our sport. I don't know. I don't know why they're not going to do it. I see all sorts of stuff, and so does the volleyball community. When you see bowling, when you see lawn bowling on TV, darts, pool, you kind of ask yourself, now, why can't we get some more exposure? But it's just not there. We're going to have to do it ourselves, and I really think live streaming is going to be where it's at.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, ESPN is really taken the reins of women's indoor volleyball. They did more matches than they've ever done this year, and ESPNU got behind it. And when I look at ESPNU, because I'm always checking it now and seeing what's on, I think that'd be great to have one men's match a week on there. I really think people would rally behind it.
I think people would. I think people would watch it. It's just a matter of delivering it on some sort of consistent basis and really developing that juniors community where you have kids who played and are fans. And until that juniors community really grows, I think we're going to have a hard time getting a ton of fans at the next level. But that's just one thought I have about it. Reed, I want to go back and talk about the Netties a little bit. You had some stuff on here. We missed you on the show. And I want to hear about your last year on this program.
Well, it's funny because it kind of ties into what we were just talking about. Is as I thought through the 2010 year, it was so hard to just think of. I mean, volleyball was so underexposed that beach volleyball seemed like it ended forever ago. So I forgot who even won. And it's hard to vote on something like that when you're starting to think of, our show is an international show. Maybe it's not it has millions of listeners, but we have listeners from all over the world. So when I start thinking about what was most influential or what was the headline of the year on the world stage, it's just too hard to pick because not everybody is seeing the same things. And it's just hard to commentate on things like that too.
Wait a second. That sounds to me like a cop out. I can't make it.
No. I made choices, but over the scope of the year, it's just hard because we're basically trying to cover a sport that nobody, we're not watching the same games, so it's really hard to comment on.
Hey, we're the source. We're here. We're going to be live streaming it here. Maybe we'll have the show be live streaming a match and us up in the booth doing our show, doing a little commentary, making a whole scene of it.
Get us to Siberia. We will live stream a match. All you got to do is pay us $10,000 each.
Putin can take care of that.
Go,
that's pocket
Reed.
Change, man. That's pocket change in Russia.
Yeah, they're...
Huh?
Either that or they're going to break your knees. One of the two.
Fine with either one.
Just depends on what we say. Really. I might end up with my knees broken.
What do you guys think about everyone thinking Barnett is Sullivan on this show? He gets called Sully and Sullivan a lot.
I do?
On the message boards.
Are you referring to one specific?
Yeah.
Someone complaining?
Yeah, a little bit. I always love to read these things, especially when it's heckling me and you.
That's no surprise. That's what people's favorite thing to do is out there. Just troll it up. Troll it up. So we're going to quote some trolls.
Can I please?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ready? Troll quote. Here we go.
I think Reed's going to love this one. This is from Volley Talk last week, talking about what a great show we had. Listened to the whole thing, really enjoyed it. Pettit was excellent, as was TK. Week before with Ken Steph was pretty good, too. Went on about some funny moments, about TK talking about coaches hitting on players and teammates sparking up grit dogs between sets. And then it said, someone needs to tell Geeter and Sully that their 30 to 40 minutes of idle banter is fun for about 10 minutes. The rest is a mind-numbing waste of time. Either shorten the show or get more guests. You two are not funny. Do they mean Eric Sullivan or do they mean you? I did respond and I said, I agree. I think Sullivan is not funny at all, but I love that Geeter guy. Because I do. I mean, I love me some me.
Maybe we should put Sullivan on for 40 minutes and just see what happens.
But then I
the important part there is that for 10 minutes you guys are funny.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I'm like, if I can be funny 10 minutes a day on live radio, that's awesome.
That's 10 minutes that we're funnier than
absolutely
anyone else is in
absolutely
real life.
Agree. I just want to know, because then when I told Kevin about this, because I think that guy thinks I'm Sullivan, but I thought he meant Sully was on for a long time. But when I thought about it, Sully was on for 5 minutes last week. I think people think you're Sullivan.
Yeah.
All this work you do.
Yeah, and they think I'm just at Nebraska taking down the big bucks, carrying John Cook's book bag, putting his suitcase on the bus.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
John Cook and Eric Sullivan were in SoCal this weekend. A lot of coaches at the MLK Speakeasy Classic. It's a tournament for a girls' club that we do. It's not a sanctioned event. It's not, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't go towards qualification or anything like that. But we started it eight years ago, and there's probably 100 college coaches there.
Speakeasy. How much liquor you got there?
Come on, bud. MLK, dude. MLK.
It's a speakeasy. That's prohibition, right? You got to have liquor.
Show a little
illegal
respect.
Liquor.
Show a little respect to the girls. But it was good. It was a good tournament. Great team won.
Sports Shack.
Yeah, they did. We did.
Well, you know, the gold
medal. Believe me, let me just get this straight. Yes, we won. It means absolutely nothing. But as I was saying to you guys before the show, if you win anything, beginning of the year, end of the year, middle of the year, it means you're doing something right.
Win's a win.
I didn't think we had any shot. So for us to come out and win means, you know, we're at least on the right path, I think.
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm going to take a step away from the show, maybe go get a latte or something. I'll be right back. Why don't you just have this guy guest host with you?
Who's here?
Hello.
Eric Sullivan.
I thought you guys got a busy schedule today, so I thought I'd get my call in early, yeah. Especially when you're referencing some volleyball blog that I've heard of.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Sully, they say you and I are not funny, but then we started thinking about it. I think maybe they think Barnett is actually you.
Yeah, that's obvious that they're talking about Barnett, and that's a big upgrade for Barnett, so he should be stoked.
My mustache is definitely better.
There's no way. Dude, I don't even know how to respond to that. You can't even grow a mustache.
That's my point. You have an excellent mustache.
Hairless Barnett.
If I'm you, I'm all set. Now I can be multicultural.
Ah, I see. The mustache is the upgrade.
Esau, you were out at the MLK Classic this weekend. What'd you think of the talent?
It was good. You know, it was, it's good to get out and see the kids and kind of start the recruiting season. And, you know, there's some young, good kids, but that's pretty much the norm for Southern California. So no big shocks, I don't think, but it was good to get out there and see them.
Did you go out to Arizona?
No.
Okay, I thought you guys went there too.
Where were you, Geeter? I didn't see you out there. You just taking the weekend off?
No, Saturday I had to work Bruins Live for UCLA, your former alma mater, against Oregon, and then I was there on Sunday for the playoffs.
So you're
really
just
mattered.
The closer now. You don't even show up.
I came in, let Marcio and Tim Jensen do all the work on Saturday, and I come and close on Sunday.
Who are you, Al Skate?
That's what I'm about, winning.
That's nice. That's a nice win for you guys.
Yeah, it's nice. You know, as I was telling these guys, it doesn't mean anything, but Sully, you know, when you win, at least you're doing something right, and especially we lost one of our big middles to a sprained ankle. I thought that gave some other girls the opportunity to play, and you know, sometimes those injuries work out in your favor because it gives other people opportunities. So it was nice to see our girls battle, and you know, we came back in a couple wins, and they showed some grit.
How much are injuries a factor at the junior level? If you're going through a season, you start with 12, 15 players. How many are going out with injuries throughout the year?
You know, we got real fortunate last year, and I think because it's such a long season, girls get dinged up throughout the season. You might lose them for a week here, and then there's always, you know, you look around SCVA or around the country, there's always somebody loses someone to an ACL or a bad ankle. It's more about timing and when it happens. If it happens around a qualifier or JOs, you could be in big trouble because teams just don't have the depth anymore because there's so many clubs. And we have decent depth, but it's not like you're going 2-3 deep at a position.
Hey, on the other side of that, Sully, I wanted to ask you about these girls now that are playing from the age of 12, specializing sometimes even from that age in the sport of volleyball. Is there discussion among Division I coaches about the workload that some of these kids are getting even before they get to college?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of discussion about it, and I don't know how you change it. I mean, there's some ideas out there, but yeah, the girls, they get specialized in sports, they get specialized in positions, and then they're playing volleyball 11 and a half months out of the year. I mean, it's gotten out of control a little bit. Their high school season, you know, ends and they're trying out for their club the following day and, you know, vice versa. And then you throw some USA programming in there in the summer for the kids that are able to do that stuff, and it's continuous. So, yeah, it's a concern. And, you know, we get kids that have some overuse injuries by the time they show up, and you know, we've got to deal with them when they get here. So it'd be nice if that wasn't the case, and if the kids were able to play a few more sports like we were when we grew up. And I'll tell you, it's one of the great things about Nebraska kids is that they, you know, they go small town. If they're small town, they play all the sports at their school because they have to. And so they come, they're well-rounded. Maybe they're not as polished as volleyball players, but they're great athletes.
Yeah, I want to ask you that about the mental side, because we know about the wear and tear on the physical side if you're just playing one sport. But what about the mental side of having only done one thing and maybe been successful at that for your entire life and not dealt with adversity versus having played a bunch of different sports?
Sure. I mean, I think that's a great way of looking at it. Plus, you know how, I mean, you get into the grind with a national team, and that's kind of your schedule. You're going from club to indoor back to the national team, and it's nonstop. You know how that grinds on you.
Yeah, burnout.
Yeah, it's refreshing to get into something different. And, okay, yeah, you're still being active and working hard, but you're doing something different. So, I mean, I think all those things are issues. I mean, it's like I said, it's kind of gotten out of control, and you know, it's a way that people are making their living now, and so it makes some sense.
You know, Esau, I use Jane Croson as an example because she plays for me, but, you know, she was unable to play this high school season. It was kind of well-publicized. She was kicked off the team, so she had to, you know, get her grades together and do some things for a few months and just work out on her own, and she didn't play any volleyball. So it took about a month, month and a half to really get back, but this weekend she looked better than I've ever seen her. That break might have been great for her, might have been the best thing moving forward.
I'll bet you it absolutely was. I mean, not only are they playing all the time, but look at the conditions they're playing in. I mean, they get in these qualifiers and they're playing 3 days straight, tons of matches. It's all on concrete. You know, if the player's really good on their team, they're probably taking, you know, 80% of their swings. And there's just a ton of overuse. And, you know, it's a little scary. You get a kid that commits early. I mean, it's scary to kind of watch their career, and you're kind of hanging on and hoping that they're going to make it through healthy by the time they get to college.
In talking about the mental side of the game, one of the times I discovered how important that was when I was playing in Austria, and I was kind of miserable there, not too happy, not playing great, and I came home for Christmas for 3 days. I got sick while I was here. I stayed an extra day at home because I was so sick I didn't want to fly back. And I flew back and met my team in Belgium, arrived in Belgium at 6 a.m., had to play in a match at 10 or 11 that morning in Belgium, and had to play a tournament for 3 days.
Yeah.
And ended up, I was MVP of the tournament, and my team went to the finals. I played extremely well, only because I had been at home for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
And I was mentally right, because physically I was thrashed.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Mentally, I was so refreshed, and that was the first time it really hit me how important that was and how it was affecting me when I was overseas and not really happy with what the situation around me was happening.
Well, Esau, yeah. I had an interesting conversation with a couple of coaches that we all know, and I'm not going to bring their name up now, but a lot of them are in the men's game, and it was over the weekend, and we were talking about the men's game and where it is right now. And yeah, the level is really high, but you know what's funny? Some of the coaches said, yeah, the guys are kind of soft out there now, and they think it's because these guys don't play other sports.
Yeah, it wouldn't be surprising.
You know what? When we all played, as you said, we played basketball, I played football. You had no choice. Volleyball is just something you kind of did, and then you got better at it. And next thing you know, there was an opportunity to play in college, and we all took it. You know, I'm talking about late 80s, early 90s, mid 90s. But you know, nowadays, I think kids are so one dimensional, and they're not learning how to play these other sports. They're not learning about failure, sitting on the bench, learning how to battle for a spot. I think they're giving it to them too easy, and it is soft.
Yeah, it's too bad. Barney, you know, the best thing about your story that you left out, I don't know if you remember or not, but a man and I drove down and actually met you in Belgium because we were right there in that mental state in Holland where I was playing. We needed a break and hang out with another American.
That's right. It's all a blur. And it's tough to think that was like 10 years ago now or something.
Yeah, that you were playing for that crazy dude that wore the black trench coat the whole time.
Peter Kleinman. It actually wasn't a trench coat. It's a suit coat that he wore as a cape.
Yeah, that thing was awesome.
We still have a little red devil that's kind of the anti-Santa Claus there in Austria. And he's one of these characters that's very popular through Europe, that there's an anti-Santa Claus around Christmas time. And it's a little devil with a black cape and red underneath. And he gets set out every Christmas, and that's Peter Kleinman. We put Peter Kleinman out at our home every year just to remind us.
That's awesome. That guy looked like he was trying to take over the world.
He was, one volleyball club at a time from Austria. Well, hey, Sully, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, no problems. Talk to you guys later.
All right, Sully, thanks, man.
Bye.
All right, there was.
He also said it was a big upgrade for you to be called Sully on Volleyball Talk.
I'm telling you, my hair and mustache features are much, much better. Hey, any thoughts about last week? We had Terry Pettit, we had Tim Kelly, and we had Ann Cordes. Three great guests. Thought it was a value-rich episode of The Net Live. Do you have any reflections?
I thought all three were really good. And what was funny about when I left that show, I got some emails, some text messages during the week. I talked to a couple college coaches this weekend at the tournament. They all had some great things to say about The Net Live, but everyone loved that show. I think it was just an informative show, and everyone brought their own thing. You know, Pettit, you know, is a guy that can really preach it. You know, I think he's got that respect, that street cred, because he's done it, and he's revered, and he really said some really cool things about club volleyball, about coaching, about recruiting, really touched on all those spectrums. And then I think Tim Kelly came in, and I thought that was more of a surprise. You know, the people who know him completely love him. We've known him for a long time. But, man, nobody knows that business better than him.
Absolutely.
The guy can sell. He's smart. He's funny. I think people were taken back by it if they don't know him. And they're like, well, this guy's great. Let's have him on again. And then Ann Cordes, how do you not fall in love with her? She's hilarious. She's great. I mean, I even wrote on Volley Talk, Louisville's in good hands. You just tell she's got that energy. She's positive. She's fun. So it ended up being a really good show. I went back and listened to it, and I was impressed with us. No, I'm just kidding. I was impressed with the guests. They were great.
I love that Ann, she's one of those women and one of those coaches that is going to get stuff done. Just GSD. She doesn't want to talk about it. She wants to go out and do it. And I thought her expression of that and saying, we're going to have an assistant coach like a head coach, a like-minded person, and we're going to take this, and Louisville's going to be great. I'm excited to see what happens in the next couple of years. I thought the best thing Tim had to say about being overseas was a quote that everyone out there who is thinking about playing overseas or has players that are thinking about overseas ought to inform their players of. And that is, the most organized volleyball you have played is now behind you. Because you're going from what is a $100 million or more dollar organization in a university, even a small university. You're going from that type of organization where you have gym time, trainers, support staff, you have places to work out, all these things, and you're taking yourself into a professional situation where they don't own the gym, probably, many of these teams. They don't own a workout facility. So you go in and you have to sometimes get bumped by a rave or some kids event at the gym or any number of reasons. I was talking to Alex Kelly about this just this past week when she was over in Germany. And she's complaining about the fact they went to work out at the gym, and there were kids there, and they had rented the gym for an hour and a half, and the team had to wait. She's like, this is ridiculous. I said, no, this is Europe. This is how it goes. And a lot of that stuff is just going to happen, and the players need to know that. So I thought Tim really put that out there in a clear, succinct manner. And then Terry Pettit. Yeah, I think he just had some very interesting things to say and life experience. It's one of those things that you look at as a person and think, boy, this guy's been to some places that I haven't been yet, and I have a little bit to learn.
Yeah, I think when Terry was on, I kept thinking, God, man, if he ever spoke at a conference that I was at, I would for sure sit there for an hour and listen. You know, or you'd love to just post up with him and have a half an hour conversation with him. Just because I think he can preach it on a lot of different levels. I loved when he said club volleyball is like Afghanistan. maybe the top line. Jay Roche, save that, because when it comes to the Netties, 2011 in December, top lines, that's going to be in the running.
I think we all just stared at each other after he said that. Like, did that really just happen?
Yeah, I could. I loved it. I saw it on Twitter all day. Some people were tweeting it, quoting it.
I thought of Terry this past week when I was reading this article about Brian Gimolero at Long Beach State. We'll get the article up there on Facebook. We'll get it posted, the link. It was talking about recruiting and the money that goes into volleyball from different schools, football schools, and the rise and kind of the change in the power structure of volleyball programs in the United States.
BCS schools.
Yeah.
How they're able to fund.
Right. They're able to fund it with football dollars or basketball dollars and all this big money that they then put into volleyball. And the premise of the article was that somehow is bad. And I disagree with that. I don't think it's bad at all when money's getting pumped into the sport. If you're going to siphon money off of football and basketball and put it into developing volleyball programs, amen. I can't really argue with that.
No, there's no question about it. I mean, if anyone is putting money into our sport in big budgets like a Texas, like a Penn State, Florida, more power to them. That can only make us better. I mean, look at where our sport used to be. It was a West Coast dominant sport, and then you had Penn State. You know, and now, you know, you had five SEC teams make the tournament. Duke went to the Elite Eight. I mean, things are starting to happen in our sport, and it's because more money is being dumped into it. Because, yes, football and those BCS conferences, when they're successful, they have more money for their schools.
And the reason I thought of Terry was that Brian was complaining that it's not how it used to be. Now, his program used to be reasonably successful. Went to, won a national championship,
yeah.
Was typically a powerhouse, always a threat to go to the Final Four, and now in the last nine seasons has lost in the first round every single year. And so I was thinking about Terry, and he was saying that adaptability is one of the key components for coaches in their later years, that they have to be able to adapt to what the changing environment is instead of continuing to do what they were previously successful with. And I thought, here, Brian, you need to go talk to Terry. You need to give Terry a call and get yourself right and get out there and try and recreate your program instead of complaining that things are stacked against you. Things may be stacked against him, right?
Yeah.
It's okay. He was saying that, we don't get fans in the building. We don't have enough support. Well, you better get out and fundraise, because if you don't do it, nobody else is going to do it. And as far as putting 10,000 fans in your building, at Long Beach State, are you kidding me? Have you tried to park there?
Not easy.
No, you can't put 10,000 people in that building. You're parking all over the place. But I just thought of Terry and thought, God, this is something that I think a lot of coaches get into. And it reminded me of Loyola Marymount over the last few years. And I had a little bit of touch with what was going on at Loyola Marymount through a few different people. And it seemed like the coach, he's not that he doesn't care, but he's sort of mailing it in. He's sort of doing whatever he had done before and making the tournaments the goal. And Brian, you're right. If you were trying to recruit top people, just making the tournament is not the goal for top people. They want to go and win. They want to be Penn State. They want to be Cal. They want to be Stanford. They want to go out and they want to win matches. And you're going to have to find a way to win matches and bridge that gap between where you are now and where you were.
You know, we used to work our butts off when I was at Northridge, and it came from our coach, John Price, about getting our community and the kids at our school to go to the games. And it became really popular. And I think we led the nation in attendance one year, and I think we came in second the rest of the years. But we were about 3,000 a match, and for a men's game, that was pretty big. I think the schools that do it right in the NCAA, in the women's side, are the ones that really get out there and work at it, whether it's getting to the local stores. But it starts with getting the other athletes. Get the other athletes. Get the other students. Get the fraternities. Get the sororities. When people go to a live event like that and they see volleyball, they have a lot of fun. And for students, it's just about going out at night and having a good time.
Yeah.
Hanging out there, heckling, yelling. That's part of it. And when it becomes part of the culture, you're going to be successful. You will start getting people there. It's infectious, I'm telling you.
You have to find a way to co-opt those people, their events, be creative as to how to get folks in the building, themes, that kind of stuff. I know at Lipscomb, when I talked to Brandon, I talked to him a lot. One of the things they do is an all-white night where everybody shows up wearing all-white. He wears a bone white suit, everything.
All the way. Photo of that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But you have to be creative in your thinking. You have to get outside of what you were doing before. I think Brian used to be in a situation where, yeah, he got great athletes. He was here. He was one of the powerhouses. Well, that's faded now. Yeah. There are lots of other teams drawing on the Southern California talent and drawing people out of this space. You have to do something to get the focus back on your program and get yourself achieving. But you have to do it. You have to change. And I think that's where Terry really hit it on there, was with adaptability. All right, The Net Live here on TheVolleyballNetwork.com. We've got Todd Rogers coming up next. Talk about the beach. Had a lot of talk about that. I hope Todd's going to clarify some stuff for us.
The professor.
I wonder who he thinks is better looking, himself or the doll?
The doll. Raji.
All right, The Net Live on TheVolleyballNetwork.com. We'll be right back.
Hey, parents. Do you know about the USYVL?
The United States Youth Volleyball League?
Having taught over 100,000 kids ages 7 to 15 the sport of volleyball, the league's proven techniques, super fun approach, and self-esteem lifting methods are unmatched. Truly, volleyball starts here. For more information about the league and programs in your area, visit usyvl.org. That's usyvl.org.
on the plane on my brain, about to do the show. 40K contract, take it out the toe. Dice symbolize my life, roll them on the floor. From your grubby hands, as you hand me grandstand, you live a shishy like we live the bomb bomb beat. Hide it in the book while we watch the TV. Think you got us fooled, who? Never again. First time, shame on me. Second time, your time will end.
Welcome back to the Net Live. I'm Geeter, along with Kevin Barnett, DJ J. Roche, Reed Pretty from Siberia. Time to bring on one of the great beach volleyball players of all time out of UC Santa Barbara. Has 72 open wins. That is seventh best all time. Five-time best defensive player in the world. A 2006 MVP. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the professor, Todd Rogers. The gold medalist from 2008, T. Roger. What's up, Todd?
Not much, Keith. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Todd. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to give you an intro again, so that might have been my last shot, so I wanted to make it special for you.
I appreciate that.
You know, Todd, I was listening to the interview that you did last time you were on the show with Kevin and Reed, and you were doing the dishes. It was clinking in the background, pots and pans. Can you not do the dishes this time around?
You know, I actually thought about that, and I do have some dishes prepared, but first off, I wanted to make some banana bread. I just want everyone to know how domesticated I've become.
Hear the mixer spin up.
Yo, in case you don't know, we had Nick Lewin on here when the whole AVP thing went away, and he was, like, taking a crap, putting us on hold all the time. So, you know, show us a little respect and don't do the dishes. We okay?
All righty.
All right, Raji. Now, so, Raj, season's going to be starting soon. Tell us what your plans are for 2011. I hear a lot of players going over FIVB full-time.
Yeah, that's going to be filling our eyes plan as it stands right now. You know, we were hopeful over the fall. In fact, I was really hopeful that there was going to be something that was going to be available to us, domestically speaking, like a true tour. But that doesn't look like that's going to be the case. Certainly there may be some USA Volleyball events, and you know, I know Albert Hanneman's looking at doing a tour, and there's several other things going on, but as it stands right now, our focus is going to be on the FIVB, just based upon the fact that they're definitely going to be paying, and they're definitely going to have tournaments.
So if the USAV has four tournaments, Todd, would you come back if it worked in your schedule?
If it worked in the schedule, of course I would either come back or, I mean, there's obviously a lot of different variables involved there. So you've got, I know they've already scheduled one versus the World Championship, so obviously I'm not going to come back to that. And then the other variable is prize money. You know, I mean, if it's a $50,000 tournament back in the States, or I could play in an open event overseas, I'm going to lean towards the open event overseas. It just, you know, it makes fiscal sense, and coming back and forth over the drink, the Atlantic, can be long, as you well know.
Yeah. You know, Todd, I can't imagine how much you get asked this, but I get asked every day, what's going on with the AVP? How disappointed were you when it closed its doors, and what is the future of beach volleyball in the United States?
Obviously, I was very disappointed. It was disappointing the fact that you know, you had new management that came in 2009, kind of just a whole new ownership management crew. And there was a lot of excitement, I think, amongst all of the players about how things were going to change, and I did think things did change, many things for the good, not all bad. Unfortunately, management / ownership was not able to continue that through 2010. Certainly it was a sinking ship as far as money was concerned, and they had to call it. And it's I grew up watching and then being able to play on the AVP and for it to sink yet again, which is essentially I've been around – three, I think, incarnations of it over the five or six times that it's sunk. It's pretty depressing that we just cannot get the right combination of people involved and the right combination of marketing and business savvy to move it beyond where it's gone before.
Where is it right now in terms of, you know how you said you were hopeful? Was there something that was close to happening? We hear so many rumors when it comes to what's been happening this offseason.
There were a lot of things I think that were semi-close. I don't think they were super close. Obviously, you know, my agent, Ryan Morgan, was out there trying to do something. I had another friend that's from New York that was out there trying to get something accomplished. Both of them were very, very capable people, and I thought that they would be able to do something. But, you know, there's so many people trying to get something done, I think it actually became kind of a negative. When you have four, five, six different groups out there calling the same sponsors, calling Anivia, all the old AVP sponsors, or calling new sponsors, as a sponsor, I could say for my own self, I would look at that and go, which one of these people do we sponsor? And why should we sponsor them? Well, let's just let them all hash it out and sit on the sidelines, knowing that we do want to be involved, but you know, not wanting to put our dollars behind someone who's going to fail and not knowing who's going to fail and who's going to be successful.
Todd, in order to reincarnate beach volleyball here in the United States, what are the one or two things you think absolutely have to change about how the business is run?
Well, one of the weird things about, this is my opinion, of course, about beach volleyball is I think you kind of have three separate components of business. Normally in a business, if I'm going to go in business with you guys, let's say, it's you guys and it's me. And there's only two components to that. There's the, you know, an ownership group and then whoever's going to run the show. And so you're kind of looking at it from this, those two perspectives in terms of splitting the profits. With beach volleyball, you really have three different components, and that's the tough part in sports. You've got, obviously, the ownership. You've still got management who most of the time wants a piece of the pie as well, not just a paying job, or at least that's a carrot to get better management involved, is to have them have a piece of the total pie. And then the players want a piece of the pie. And maybe one of those has to give. I don't know. I'm not a Harvard business graduate, but I see those three components as it's harder to split a pie three ways than it is two. That's as simple as it can get.
Hey, Todd, where's the PBVA tour right now? What's the latest with that?
Well, there is no PBVA tour. There is a PBVA organization, obviously an association. That the bylaws are essentially finished or so darn close that they literally might be finished. They should be finished by today. And we are hoping to send those out. Actually, we were hoping they would be done a week ago, to be honest with you. But for whatever reason, these things seem to take a heck of a lot longer than I would anticipate them taking. And I'm hoping to get that out to the membership from 2007 to approve the new bylaws as early as this afternoon. And then they have, I'm not sure if it's 24 hours or 48 hours to respond in the positive or the negative, and then we move forward from there.
Are all the players on board? Most of the players on board?
I can actually answer that question to you. I think so. I think as a general, the PVVA, it can be a fantastic thing. It's more a matter of right now, I look at it as it's being, the PVVA is kind of driven by economics. You know, there's just no money in beach volleyball right now. And so then you get into at what point do you draw lines in the sand as to who can be on the board and who can vote and who's involved in this capacity or this capacity. And, when we get down to that part, which we haven't gotten down to yet, that is when it'll be an interesting talks, I guess you could say.
Todd, what do you see as the benefit to the PBVA?
Just like any, the NFL union or the Major League Baseball, maybe the NFL is not so strong, but the NFL or MLB, NBA, I mean, their unions are extraordinarily strong, and they are able to push the salaries of those respective players that play in their leagues up to, as we all know, astronomical highs. And I think that's what the PBVA can help facilitate, that we are all on the same page. There's a lot of work to be done on that front, but you know, I got to give Hans Stolfus a lot of credit. He went out there and, you know, we have a lot of differing viewpoints on things, but he has gone out and he's done a lot of work for the good of the PVPA and trying to get things done out there.
You listen to Todd Rogers on the Net Live. Todd, moving forward, you guys coming off one of the best seasons ever, 14 events overseas and domestically. You won, 18 events. You won 14 of them. What is something that you and Phil, this is a huge year in terms of qualification, world championships. What are some of the goals for you and Phil this year following up last year?
You know, after a season like last year, which, to quite frank with you, was unexpected. I did not expect to win, I think it was 9 out of 12 FIVB events, and then, you know, be perfect on the AVP tour. Ended up losing in Cincinnati to John and Sean in the finals there for, our one domestic loss. You know, looking forward to this year, I would love to maintain that. I don't necessarily expect to do so. You know, the more you win, the harder it is to maintain that. So for us, you know, a good season would be, you know, probably to, I don't know, I can't speak to the domestic part of the events, but, you know, on the international tour, our goal is to win the FIVB overall tour title again. And I don't know about winning 9 of 12 or 10 of 14 or however many events there are and that we will play in, but certainly to win our fair share of events would be our goal. And if we win more than our fair share, if we do, again, the 9, 10, 11 wins season, then fantastic. But that's pretty tough to do on the FIVB. The competition just keeps getting tougher and tougher. And I don't anticipate that going in, although I would definitely be striving for it.
Todd, we've talked a lot on this show about the importance of Olympic qualification for all the teams coming up in this next year. So what is your understanding of how that process is going to work and how does it fit into your and Phil's schedule?
To be honest with you, it is still super convoluted. I'm still not 100% sure. I've been told all kinds of different things, and then other people are told other things, and then even other people are told other things. So it seems to me that whoever is kind of pushing this forward is telling whoever they're speaking to what they want to hear. Which is kind of annoying, but I can't give you an honest answer. I do know that in the past, then FIVB, I do know that the USA still has to qualify two spots through the FIVB World Tour. So that's kind of, at this point in time, I feel like I got to go and at the very least qualify those two spots, and then, you know, hopefully for me that means I'll be in, but if it doesn't, then at least we have qualified those two spots already.
Well, if it works anything like indoor, even if you qualify the spot, that's not going to guarantee you a spot. You're going to have to win an independent tournament if they're going to structure it the way that several other sports are.
Right, and that's the big crux, is that the FIVB has to sign off on that, USA Volleyball has to sign off on that, USC has to sign off on that. From what I know, FIVB has already signed off on that. Obviously, USAV wants that because that's a potential moneymaker for them. And then, from my understanding, the USOC is the point at which they're kind of going, okay, well, we need to have a system in place here that no Tom, Dick, and Harry can't just jump into a tournament and qualify, because that's not how it works. And that's not how it works in any sport. You have to have achieved either a certain time or a certain level of competence to be able to even have a shot at getting into an Olympic trials event.
That's a good point. I like that about the criteria. You can't just come in, maybe win that particular tournament. There should be some sort of prerequisite to being able to enter the
Absolutely.
Qualification tournament, but that tournament should still be open to anybody once those slots are selected, because the problem we've run into before is where you have a team a year out that qualified for the Olympics, and then a year later is not playing well at all, and certainly not the best team in the United States, and goes to the Olympics to represent the United States. That's what I think people want to avoid, and that's why there was so much pressure to strip the qualification process from the FIVB solely.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I agree with the fact that I have seen teams, obviously one teams in the USA, I've seen teams do the same thing overseas, where they qualified 2 years out, essentially. I think the number one driving force is money, purely and simple. The ability to have an Olympic qualifying event, sell it off, make money, which is why USA Volleyball and AVP and everyone else that's involved is involved in the first place. Although your sentiments are altruistic, and that's how it should be, like that's how it should be viewed, I think that's very much on the back burner for all the people that are involved, regardless of what they say.
Hey, Todd, don't use words that people don't understand that are listening to the show.
Altruism, huh?
So, Todd, what are you going to do when you're living in Europe? Has this been discussed with Phil? Because this is probably going to be the most important thing moving forward. Is he bringing a PlayStation with...
It's an Xbox, right?
He has an Xbox, or what is he bringing?
That's all he needs, right?
Is that all he needs over there?
You know, I'm guessing that he'll probably buy one when he's over there, knowing Phil, and maybe just buy an apartment over there if it looks like he's going to be over there for longer than 2 or 3 months. Actually, we have discussed it. We've looked at I've talked to Gary Walsh about it. I've talked to Casey. I've talked to a couple of other players, Matt Furbringer, et cetera, and spots that people are looking at are Rome, Zurich, London, just kind of looking around and seeing, hey, where is it easiest to base out of from a flight perspective, a cost perspective. So we're not set in stone, but we have been looking at that as a potential option.
Would you be open to a reality show, all of you guys living in one house in Spain, and I'm there hosting it?
Time to get real.
Time to get real with Todd Rogers. Are you ready for that show?
Oh.
Crickets.
Uh-oh, we lost them.
Did we lose them, the best part?
Didn't want to answer that question. I would love the idea of Furbringer getting up in the morning and sticking his finger in Todd's peanut butter.
Wouldn't that be great? Put them all in one house.
Yeah.
And let's see them get after it.
What about the families? You going to port the families in too? Todd's got to bring the kids. Furby's got to bring the kids.
Once in a while, they'll be there. I mean, obviously, Sundance and Joey are going to be there. The Jennings, they're young. You know, Furby's wife works back here, so I believe Mateo and Charlie L are going to be back here in Hermosa. But I got to tell you, I think it'd be great. Is Todd back on? Todd?
He's back.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, amazing how you jumped off right when I was asking you about the reality show of all of you living in the same house in Spain. Are you in for that?
You know what? For something like that, for me, the price has got to be right.
The price has got to be right.
Oh, it's all about money.
Oh, yeah, six figures.
It's about money.
No way.
It's all about money because I'm putting myself in a dangerous position there, as any married man would be.
Absolutely agree. Now, listen, you're so smart. You're the professor. You're Todd Rogers. If I'm you, I am bringing an Xbox to Phil and saying, I bought this for you for Europe. Make him happy.
Make sure it's
Todd,
a pal.
Right?
Yeah.
Let the beast feast.
You know, actually, then I'd have to continue on down that line and buy his fiance a ticket, multiple tickets, and buy him his Halo or whatever he's playing lately. You know, Phil's pretty easy to please. You're right. If I bought him an Xbox and said, hey, bud, look what I brought you, he'd probably be, like you said, he'd be feasting all day long. The problem is getting away from that to actually get anything done might be a little difficult. I might have to crack the whip. So it's kind of a, do I do that and make him happy, but then do I make him, you know, pissed off of me because I say, hey, we got to go train. And he's like, dude, I'm in the middle of a game here. Excuse me.
I'm playing someone online. I'm playing Nick Lucena. So let me ask you this, Todd, because you and I have talked about this a lot. When we were traveling with the AVP, you know, when you started with him in 06, the maturation to where he is now, he doesn't visit Philville anymore. And for those of you who don't know what Philville is, it's just a little vacation spot in Phil's head where he just completely disappears. Less and less you've had to teach him and stuff. He really has come into his own.
Oh, well, yeah. I think he came into his own, you know, whatever, what's it, 2011 now, 2 or 3 years ago, really. And like you said, Philville, I honestly don't think he had any Philville moments last year. And really his Philville moments now are just, you know, he makes a few mental errors like we all do. It's a normal process. And his are very far and few between as far as his, you know, side-out game or his serving game, et cetera. He gets it all. And, yeah, Philville is long, long past for Phil.
More like a rest stop, not so much a town anymore.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't go there for weeks on end. Now, Todd, real quick, you know, a lot of people know you because you do a lot of the interviews and you're out there in the public. But for Phil, you know, a lot of people don't know him. Tell us about how fired up he gets when he actually plays the Brazilians in Brazil.
You know, he's pretty just fiery competitor in general. You don't see it, though, because it's not outwardly shown. He keeps it, you know, it's completely inside almost all the time, unless it's a big point or, you know, a huge match or, like you said, against a lot of the Brazilians. So he'll put up his game an extra notch. I mean, I'm not a real fiery competitor, although I do let it out more than he does. But he wants to win as much, if not more, than anyone else. I mean, similar to, I mean, you look at Misty May, incredibly fiery competitor, but how often when you watch her on the court do you see her screaming and yelling and going crazy? It's just a rare thing. She keeps it all there. She keeps it all focused. And then Carrie's the opposite. You know, she wears her emotions on her sleeve, and every point she can celebrate and yell and scream and do her thing. It's just a different way of approaching it. Both of them are intense, intense competitors, and I would put Phil right up there with them as well. And in his intensity, he just doesn't show it.
I'm sure you do because you listen every week. So hi to your former DJ, Jeremy Roche.
What's up? How's it going?
Todd, how are we doing, bud?
I've been good. What are you up to these days? Just playing gigs?
Pretty much. Just Dieter's sidekick whenever I can, just riding his coattails?
Coattails.
Coattails, yeah, that's the word I think.
Nice.
Now Todd, we sent you a link earlier today. Matt Gardhoff does some amazing skits with these dolls. The guy is very creative. You saw those today. What did you think of the Todd Rogers doll?
Like you said, I got a great chuckle out of it. I want to see what Karch's response is to that, though, because next podcast, it's just pretty funny stuff.
I love that it has your sponsors on you, too, Todd. That's always a good thing.
Well, that shows you how talented the guy is. He actually puts all the stuff and does the little things that's what makes a guy talented, I think.
Todd, we have a listener who has a question for you. Eric, go ahead.
Hi, Todd.
Hey, Eric.
Wondering what you think, as both from players' perspective and in business, the FIB does right that the AVP didn't do.
That's a good question. Well, the FIB runs a promoter model, so the FIB actually does not run any single event. They essentially take a sanctioning fee, so the promoter has to pay them X amount of dollars. They're in a unique position where they have created literally hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars through the indoor stuff that they've done through TV rights and whatnot. And so they're able to kind of, if the beach doesn't look like it's going to make money for them right away, they can absorb that cost. They can absorb $500,000 loss or whatever it is. And I think they actually did lose money for the first, I want to say, 25 years that they were in operation. I think last year or the year before was the first year they essentially broke even on the beach side of things. So the promoter has all of the costs, the risks, et cetera. The FIBB has very little. They can go out there and they can sell their sponsorships. It's, as a promoter, it would be very difficult to make money off of an FIBB event, particularly in the United States. Some of the promoters have done a great job of just building their event, but it's realistically a 3 to 5 year, at least, if you're a promoter, you're putting in that kind of time before you're going to be realistically making money, just because the FIBB controls something like 55% of the promotional space. They control the TV rights. You know, they have a lot of control over pretty much everything. So difficult model for promoter, but the FIBB has made that the standard out internationally. And, you know, myself, I probably wouldn't be a promoter for the FIBB. It's too dang hard. But there are a lot of business people out there that are willing to do so, and a handful of them have been pretty successful at it.
Todd, are there a couple of promoters in the United States who might be able to handle it? I think of a Cincinnati or a Milwaukee.
I'd like to say yes, you know, because I know the people in Cincinnati and Milwaukee. I wonder and would ask them if they were looking to go down that road, and they asked for my opinion. If they've really looked into all the regs and the regulations. It's the one thing that every time we've had an FIBB event in the United States, you know, most people are used to running an event that's similar to the AVP. It's very relaxed. Things eventually get done, and perhaps that's why the AVP has not been successful, is because of that. But when the AVP has run an FIBB event, I mean, they've been pretty close to disasters because of that. They just have not been fully prepared. They ran it like an AVP event, and even the FIVB players have said to me privately, hey, what's up with this event? Like, where are the shuttles? Where is this? I mean, it's it's run more like Swiss timing on the FIVB. Everything is at the hour, boom, 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 whereas the AVP is, hey, yeah, you play around 10 o'clock. Okay, well, that could mean 9:45. That could mean 10:30, 10:45. If they say 10 o'clock in the FIVB, it will not be before then, and if a game lasts long, it is literally exactly, and I mean exactly 10 minutes after that game has ended. And you know that, and so you prepare accordingly.
Yeah, you make a great point. Todd, going to a different subject real quick, Karch and Billy Berger's tour of the Corona Wide Open, do you think that that's where players domestically will play now? Is that really the only thing going, and have you guys ever considered going back and playing in that?
I do think a lot of players played in those events, particularly when the AVP went down. And you know, I think I'm kind of in the minority on this one. I have no problem with Karch's tour. The problem that I had with them originally is that they were out there going against the AVP or being a competitor to the AVP, and I thought it's a completely different game. They were using the old school rules. Old school court, old school ball, no antennas, you know, no net dribblers or any of that kind of stuff, side out scoring, which I don't have a problem with. And maybe that's just because that's how I grew up playing the game.
Yeah.
I enjoy that game. I don't play it very often anymore. It's very rare to play it for me. And that's mostly just because I don't want to screw up, you know, my professional side of things. But I mean, I'd have no problem once I'm done playing professionally, playing in an event like that. I still would have a lot of fun with it. So, again, my only thing is the way that they position themselves against the AVP. I didn't like that. I was pretty vocal about that out there in the marketplace, if anyone was asking.
Todd, with the collapse of the AVP last year and you guys continuing on FIVB and this year kind of being up in the air, with all that stuff happening outside of the on-the-court stuff, how has it affected your training and what, given your age and experience, are you focusing on during this offseason?
You know, for me, nothing's really changed just because, you know, the FIVB is still there. Phil and I discussed it back in October and said, okay, well, if there is no domestic event or the domestic tour, then we will just play the FIVB. We'll focus on that. We'll deal with that. And for me, that means it's kind of like, okay, I've got a two-year commitment here that I'm going to focus in for 2 years, do my normal training regimen, you know, take my rest, do my normal lifting and building up and track workouts, et cetera. And that's basically what I've done so far. And if, you know, after London, there's still nothing really domestically, which, you know, I pray is not where we're at that point in time, then, you know, I can tell you right now, I would be done. I wouldn't spend an entire another season overseas playing on the international tour at the age of 39.
Todd, 2013, you and Dax, Corona Wide Open.
You know, I actually, if I reviewed it with Dax one time, said, hey, if they ever do a Santa Barbara event that we both can play in, like maybe late in the season, how fun would that be if you and I went, just played old school, just like we did back in the, you know, 93 through 96 or whatever it was, and just had a good time, buried a keg in the sand, invited all our family and friends, and just had everyone heckle, had a Garrett Holdren out there being the best heckler of all time, getting all over our opponents.
Who's the best opponent for that match? If your hecklers are really going to get going,
oh, they were
who do you
too.
Need on the other side of the net?
Oh, it would be great if Karch could come out of retirement. I don't know. Gita, were you around in the Hermosa finals in 97?
Yep, Karch was dying laughing, so that was the best heckling he's ever heard.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's all four players, even though Dax and I absolutely got hammered, I mean, we were all four of us dying. I mean, there were times where we actually stopped the ref from blowing his whistle because we were laughing so hard because Dare was so on fire.
It was good.
Todd,
that's good.
One more question before we let you go. At 39, are you still getting better?
Good question.
Nice call by 39. I'm 37.
I was waiting for you to say that.
Oh,
because like,
you added 2 years.
Yeah, because I'm 39.
My bad.
And Todd's 2 years younger than me.
Todd, I should know better. You're my age from college.
That was fantastic.
Dang it.
You know, I don't know that I'm necessarily getting better or worse. Obviously, the older you get, the smarter you get in most things. You know, physically, I haven't had any major injuries or problems. You know, 2 years ago I had a little bit of a back tweak, but corrected that through the course of the season. And I think more than anything, I just take better care of myself. And, you know, for me, the light at the end of the tunnel is 2 or 3 years down the road. I'm going to just keep my nose to the grindstone. And obviously that number depends on what goes on with everything. But I don't think I'm necessarily getting better or worse. I think I'm just trying to maintain where I'm at. And, you know, having a partner like Phil will allow us to win a lot of events if I just maintain where I'm at.
I can answer that question because I've watched him play more than anybody has on that center court and in finals. Todd Rogers, without a doubt, is better than anyone in the world at putting together the mental game and the physical tools that he's been given. I've watched him since in 1996 on. He's gotten better every single year, and he's so mentally tough. That's why he and Phil are such a good team. Phil is the best in the world at what he does, serving and blocking, and Todd is the best in the world at what he does, and that's playing defense and that's siding out, because Todd receives 95% of the serves. That's why they are the best team in the world, and that's why I think they're going to repeat for the gold in 2012.
We're
thank you. I'm out.
Than you, and we know it.
Thank
you. That's the truth, the absolute truth.
I love it. Todd Rogers, once again, thank you for spending your morning with us, and now you can get to that banana bread.
Hey, one comment I wanted to make. I was listening to you guys earlier in the show about creating a program and a platform and getting fans in attendance and whatnot. And Geeta, you were talking about Northridge and whatnot. Locally at UCSD, the soccer program there was kind of in the doldrums, and a local guy came in and he took over, and now they're leading the country in attendance. They go out, they do all kinds of community stuff with the kids and with local groups. I mean, they routinely get 6,000 to 10,000 people in the stands. They just had the Final Four there, and they packed it, and UCSD was not in the Final Four. They won a national championship. So it's also gone over to the playing side of things. So not only have they built up this great, program on the playing side of things, it's also on the fans and whatnot. And I couldn't agree with you guys more. You got to kind of put in the time and the effort into your local community and getting that stuff done.
Todd Rogers, the professor, there he was.
And he didn't do dishes.
That was the education right there. You did all interview
it.
For
when
it.
The professor speaks, you listen, right, Jay Roche?
No doubt.
God, I've wanted him on for months. I'm so happy. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Todd Rogers. Love it.
He has an opinion. He's smart. Knows how to speak. Todd Rogers.
Creativity.
Creativity. I like
it. That's all about it. You got to get out there and be creative.
Well, but, that's why he and Phil are the best. Phil is so dominant at what he does. Todd is great at what he does. And that's why they're the world's number one team. By the way, real quick, Jay Roche, Albie Hanneman has joined the message board for the first time. He said our ratings are going to skyrocket. We appreciate that, Albie.
Just because of him?
We'll go to break, right?
Yeah, we're going
to
take a little break.
That's good stuff.
We'll be right back. We've got College Volleyball Weekly coming up.
How you feeling?
Still
hanging
Jordan
in
Larson coming. I thought it was great. I enjoyed listening.
So you're not just hanging in there. You're doing great.
I like that, Todd, if you hit him with something he doesn't agree with, he's just right back on you.
Yeah.
I love that. That's kind of my style. Look, yeah, I disagree. And here's why.
That's a guy out of your cloth, by the way.
There you go. I was just trying to think if we had beaten them in college.
You only asked one Ryan Morgan question, too?
Yeah, we had a lot of Ryan Morgan questions last time. The Net Live on TheVolleyballNetwork.com. Kevin, Geeter, Reed from Russia, DJ Roche spinning the tunes. We'll be right back with more.
Raji 4-0 against you.
What you're moving and lifting.
groovy coming back. DJ Roche, you are smooth with your transitions, man. That's professional.
That's what I do for a living.
I'd still be clicking through iTunes. There'd be dead air right now. It'd be horrible. The Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. Your host, Kevin Barnett, along with Chris Geeter McGee, DJ Roche in-house, and Reed Pretty from Siberia. We just talked to Todd Rogers. He had some great things to say about a lot of different topics, I thought. One of the things that struck me while we were listening is Indoor Funds Beach. I think that's a little shocking for many of the beach players out there to learn that, yes, the indoor game in the world funds your FIVB Beach Tour, at least up until maybe the last year or so. And the organization of FIVB events, I thought, was an interesting point about not the loosey-goosey nature of the AVP. It's, hey, it's happening here, now, and setting the fans' expectations and the players' expectations for when it's going to happen. They very much do that on the indoor side, too. It is, you know, it's over. You have 20 minutes from the time that match is over. End of story. Doesn't matter if you're warm, ready to go, or not.
Yeah, you know, I also thought it was interesting. You know, he and Phil are definitely two of the guys that would love to see something happen domestically. You know, whether it's Albert having, you know, Albert's going to have more than three events now, hoping for eight events, and whatever it is, I think those guys would really want to come back. I've talked to Phil about it. They do not want to live in Europe for 3 months.
Hey, living there in the summer is better than the winter.
Yeah,
but
no, I know, but
I get
but,
it.
You know, they'd love to have something domestic. It's time that they can be with their families, and their friends and families can see them play, and they can win tournaments here. I think it's a big deal.
We talked about it, just mentally. It's much harder to be over there. And the players over there don't get it. When you play indoor, those indoor national team players don't get it. Because they're a two-hour flight from home, or they're in their own country, maybe just in another town. It's not quite the same as being a completely overseas player.
And, Jerry, I'd like to get your take on this really quick, because I know we're going to start talking some men's indoor. But, you know, we've had events in the past where Kerry has had to go overseas. Phil and Todd have had to play in Grand Slams. The events have still been great. So whether these guys are over there or not, they're still great players. And if there are enough tournaments and these players are committed, we're going to have great events.
People in the United States want to see beach volleyball. Obviously, they want to see the best players in the world, but you want to go down to Hermosa, you want to go down to Manhattan, and you want to see the top guys compete, regardless whether you have the very top guys there or not. You want to see beach volleyball. That's the bottom line.
Agree.
Reed? I know you've been listening in over there, answering calls.
Multitasking.
Yeah.
You know what I heard? It's a shame, because what I heard is that we're losing our best Americans to, I mean, they're looking at real estate overseas. And that's the life that I live. And it's a shame to see that the beach volleyball community is going to be seeing the same thing. And who knows, maybe in a couple years, maybe it's going to be better when a tour gets going and comes back to America, to have the players kind of coming back, and maybe that'll be something that'll be marketable. But I think it's a shame that we're starting to see those players leave.
I think it's an interesting shift in reality for these players who, for so long, in the disputes between USA Volleyball and AVP, or the USOC and USA Volleyball and AVP, were talking about how great their sport was in the United States and how it was powering dollars and winning medals, and we're on TV and all this other stuff. Well, welcome to the indoor world. You're now an overseas star and irrelevant here in the United States. Unfortunately, I don't say that with any sort of pride. I just say welcome to what we have been doing since your house collapsed.
You know, I know Albert Hammond wants to come on next week, and the NBL's got some big news. So maybe we can have some positive real news in the sport of beach volleyball. So look forward to getting him on next week. It'd be great to have to just have a little momentum.
I'm all for positive momentum for the sport at any level, at any place, with any discipline, because all boats benefit from the rising tide.
Agree.
I was thinking about that, too, as you guys were interviewing him. And, you know, we've had Todd on before, and it always seems to be during, like, a contentious time. And we spend so much time focusing on the business, and it does seem heavy and kind of negative at times. But just like you said, Geeter, at the end, I mean, this is one of the best players in the world right now, if not the best, at what he does. You know, I'd love to hear how he prepares mentally and how he's made that blend between the mental game and the physical tools, just like we hear from Terry Pettit. I think that's why people loved it so much, because we got to hear so much insight and things that we can apply to our various levels of volleyball. I'd love to hear that from him as well.
I totally agree, but I think it is a positive for Todd that when things are bad, or we're talking about the business or things external to just playing, that we end up talking to him. I think that says a lot about Todd as a person, not just a volleyball player. and how respected he is inside of his own sport, and also as he starts to make that transition from just a player to perhaps a lot of other things.
Yeah, that, you know, I thought that was the amazing thing about having Kent Steffes on a couple weeks ago, and you hear him talking about how he cares about the game, and you hadn't heard from him in 13 years, and to know that he still watched and cared was kind of a cool thing, I think, for a lot of beach volleyball fans.
There's some interesting minds out there. I think someone will figure it out.
I think
I'm
so
still
too.
Sticking to that three-year timeline. I think Todd might, if he retires in two, he might be a little early. He'll have to wait 1 year to play some sort of organized volleyball here again. Odds are he'll be back, but I think that it's going to be 3 years. I think Albi, USA Volleyball, the FIVB, promoters like Ciccinelli and Cincy, mm-hmm. That it will get figured out. It will come back at
Absolutely.
Some level. The question is what level? Will it support DJ Roche and Geeter?
I think in 2011 it comes back at a lower level. We build some momentum, and I think in 2012 – we'll be a lot more established and ready to go.
I think if we can get through 2011, 2012 is going to be something's going to happen in 2012 that none of us can predict right now, in my opinion.
One interesting note on the funding side, the FIVB announced this week that they put $3.7 million toward development of beach volleyball projects. So they put that out there. There were 80 requests, 80 proposals for funding inside of that $3.7 million. One question we can answer very quickly is that a lot of money? In the grand scheme of things, you're talking about a worldwide program of developing a sport. Does $3.7 million mean anything? I don't think so. I think it's great,
no.
But I don't think it's that much money. How many events can you run?
Kevin Barnett.
I didn't know how many events you thought you could run.
No, I don't know.
3.7? I think it's a good step.
I mean, you're talking about staff and permits and...
Yeah, that barely...
Maybe one tournament, right? I mean, that doesn't seem like a lot of money, especially when you're hauling your show from one country to the next.
It barely pays your salary.
Probably three. Three tourneys.
All right,
I'd love for my salary to be like that.
Wouldn't it be nice?
I wore slippers here every single week.
Now you'd have the boots. They're more expensive. You'd buy those. See where it got Tom Brady? Wear Uggs? Get out of the playoffs.
I don't know if you're on the message board, Jay Roche, but Albert said he can still afford us. So that's good.
Good. He hasn't got
because your price is going
yeah,
up.
Yeah,
now that you're on this show, your price is skyrocketing.
He knows what kind of gigs I've got lately. I mean, my rate just goes up every week, so he might want to lock me in now.
Better than the kid's house party, Millie's recent birthday.
Yes, exactly.
Because I don't even know this, Reed, but it takes a lot of money to have the hair product that Jay Roche has.
Well, you know, I've seen the Clippers on like every highlight reel every day. I mean, Blake Griffin seems to be dunking on somebody every day. So
40.
That can be, you know, rising tide. All boats rise, right? Didn't you just say that, Kevin?
Something like that, yeah.
47.
That apply for the DJ, too?
Exactly.
Geeter, are you okay that your Lakers lost to my Clippers the other day?
Shockingly. No, I'm not okay with it, but I was shocked. But the Clippers are playing good right now, 10 out of 14. Blake Griffin has 47 against the Pacers. The guy is he's a highlight film. He's respected around the league, too. Already.
They've come together is what's happening. Like they're learning how to play as a team.
Yeah,
yeah. Don't get your hopes up too much. Sterling will do something to wreck that. If they come together... The evil dark lord will come down from his box.
Reed, do you get any football over there? Like, how are you watching NFL? Because I'd go crazy.
I right before Lindsay, my mom, and Caden came over, there was something wrong with my sling box. And I told my mom, I said, all right, take the FaceTime over there, you know, the little application on iPhone, so I could, like, try to help her fix it. And so she's got it back there. I'm like, okay, unplug, you know, before I could even say what to unplug, she unplugs it all. So my sling box is completely unplugged, and I cannot watch any football.
Oh, that is awesome.
Well, ESPN.com is the only thing that I got.
Gotcha. You just picture Reed with like a 7-7 in the corner. It's like no furniture, no sling box. It's just a really awful visual for my guy.
Hey, that was the reality until sling box came around a couple of years ago. That was a big step in the right direction for everyone living overseas. I was always waiting for the next day airing of football games in Italy. They'd do it without... the in-between parts of the plays. They would cut it. Plays over, cut, play next play starts. Very interesting. And then at halftime, you'd get the shots of the cheerleaders. Like, they're taking shots of the cheerleaders throughout the entire halftime. It's just not shown on American television. But you'd get it overseas because they'd just wait for 10 minutes with it. Very
That's
interesting
funny.
Way to watch football.
Speaking of long days, I've had the last 2 days off. And I told my wife tonight, right before we went on the show, I was like, look, I can't even stand this apartment anymore. I've been here for 2 days, and you've been here for, what, 2 months now? I said, if you want to pull the plug, I'm out of here. I'll do it. Just out of respect, because this is ridiculous.
Did you mean that?
I totally mean it. I mean, the last 2 days, it's just like, man, I got to get out of here. Just, like, go, you know, take me to a serve and pass or something. Like, maybe go serve some balls. I got to get out of the apartment.
Dude, the wife and I ended up in an Austrian hotel, apartment hotel, for an entire season. Reed played for this team as well. He was there. And I knew my marriage was going to be okay when we made it 6 months living in the same room without a garage. I remember sitting there one time, we had some discussion. I wasn't very happy. I said, you know what? If I had a garage right now, I'd be in it.
Just sitting in it.
Just sitting in it. But instead, I am still here in the same room with you.
That says a lot about the friendship.
So, yeah, we made it.
We made it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. We made it to the College Volleyball Weekly in association with the American Volleyball Coaches Association. The Net Live is proud to present each week the best that college volleyball has to offer. And since SD continues to sit atop the rankings, they get the music.
Fergie!
How about SD getting it done?
SD ending the streak against Northridge.
Oh my God.
It was 20 matches in a row, the Ridge crushed SD down.
That's pretty nice. So we have a few correspondents lined up for this College Volleyball Weekly. We talked to a couple of different people about College of Volleyball on the men's side. And right here we have our newest member, Mike Sondheimer, a gentleman who has been at UCLA for, 34 years, I think it is. He produces stats for a variety of different volleyball broadcasts and other sporting contests for big companies like NBC and TBS. And a guy who we've certainly met throughout the years, Geeter, you and I. Mike.
Bondi.
Welcome in.
Hard to listen to that music, but Sling Box was invented by a Bruin, so I'd rather talk about that.
Yeah, I knew that would be tough on you. What a way to welcome you into the show.
Hey, your team sits at number three. They get a little bit better. You can come in and see your own fight zone.
Yeah, I understand that, too.
Hey, Sonny, talk about UCLA back in the top of the rankings. Had a couple of disappointing seasons. What do you like about them so far?
I mean, it's a veteran team that's a year older, and that really helps. And it's a case right now, it's early season, there's so much balance in men's volleyball. When you only have 4.5 scholarships compared to the women having a full 12, it's going to go in cycles. And teams are going to get better, and teams are going to get worse. I mean, you got a team like UCLA where everybody's back, they're better. And then you have a team like Cal State Northridge, who had an incredible year last year, that's trying to fill in a lot of pieces, and they're going to get better as the year goes on. But right now, it's real tough on Jeff Campbell.
Northridge seemed like a team last year that just sort of peaked at the end and did the right thing as far as cycling through a season. Do they really have the talent to return to the Final Four again?
I don't think so. I mean, I really think last year SC started one, they started one this year, but a team like Northridge, there's enough balance in the league that you really have to have something or somebody coming in that's a star player, otherwise you're not going to go that far.
As I look at the standings here, SoCal number one, Stanford number two, the defending champion. Tell us a little bit about their talent.
Well, the biggest thing about Stanford, nobody can pass the volleyball better than Stanford. You still have McLaughlin and Lawson back on the outside as primary passers, and the great Soji as libero. Their one big loss, Kavika Soji was the national player of the year. Where they miss him is not only was a great leader, but he was also their best server. And they beat BYU a close five, and they beat BYU the next night in four. And those are two good wins because BYU won the Santa Barbara tournament, and BYU has the best freshman in the country right now, and a kid named Taylor Sanders, future USA national team caliber.
It's interesting that BYU has done well recently. They've had lots of problems with coaches and now with players being suspended. What do you know about that situation and how it's being managed?
Well, I think the thing is that BYU is still trying to find it, and Rob Nielsen's done a heck of a job, and he's got everybody back. He's got all the pieces together, and they will be a factor at the end of the year. I mean, I think that they are a factor now, but as Taylor Sander gets better and they determine they still have multiple hitters trying to figure out who's going to be in what spot, a couple guys back from Mission, they will be right there. I mean, I think Stanford's going to be right there. SC is going to be right there. I think Pepperdine is another team that has some outstanding hitters and players, but they've got a brand new middle and they have one new hitter, and as they come along, they're going to be there. Ohio State gave them two great battles out here in the West, and Ohio State is one of the best teams right now that's come out of the Midwest maybe in the last 5 to 10 years.
Wait, so just to recap, Pepperdine has a chance to do it, Northridge no chance.
I don't think Northridge has a chance to win it this year.
You know, Sondy, Don't get involved in that game.
I know who went to Northridge. That's why I'm saying that.
Trying to do. You know what I mean?
Their best shot was 93, but the setting broke down in the finals, and that cost them the championship.
Did that just hurt? He broke up. Setting broke down in 93. It's not my fault.
If they had Kevin Barnett, they probably would have won.
Oh, God, he's crushing me. Sonny, talk about the Anteaters at UC Irvine, not the wanted.
I think UC Irvine's another team that by the end of the year, John Sparrow has a lot of depth. He's trying to find the right combination. I thought before the year they would start off a lot stronger than they have, but they're going, you know, trying to figure out which setter. They've got a great, another Stork coming off the great Jeff Stork family. He's now there and eventually will be the number one setter. They got Carson Clark, who may be the best all-around player in college right now. He's had a stint with the USA national team. And it's just a matter for them of finding the right other five players to fit in the mix. They lost their libero for academic reasons in the fall, so that's been replaced. They're still working on that situation. And their outside hitters have been inconsistent in the early going. But by the end of the year, they're going to be a factor to potentially get to Penn State.
You're listening to Michael Sonheimer on the net live from UCLA. Cal State Northridge did beat Pepperdine earlier this week, so that's always a wonderful thing.
I mean, Northridge has got a big chance. Northridge plays UCLA tomorrow night. And, again, I don't think UCLA is that good. They're better. But, again, there's so many teams that are good, it's whether they can be better. SC can be a super team. Stanford, if Evan Berry continues to set well, they could be a super team too.
Sondi, we talk about this on the show a lot, about men's volleyball and how it can get more popular. You know, ESPN really did a good job showing women's matches this fall. They had a couple on a couple times a week. Why can't there be a men's match a week come March and April when basketball dies down and stuff on ESPN?
I think the AVCA has to fight that and put some money behind that the way they just support women's volleyball. I think men's volleyball in some ways is an afterthought because it is going at the height of basketball season. March Madness ends, then you get to April. And I think it's just very, very important it gets back because the problem is we used to have the regionals on College Sports, you know, Network. They're not on anymore. And there really isn't any coverage until you get to the championship team matches, and you've basically missed the whole season by then. It's really about money and support.
Mike, is there a team for outside of California you think is perhaps a dark horse or really has a chance this year outside of an obvious one like Penn State?
I mean, I think Penn State, they have maybe one of the best players in the country. Joe Sunder was the MVP of the Hawaii tournament last weekend, and he's phenomenal, and they've got a couple of parts. What they don't have is a Matt Anderson on that team, and they don't have a great middle blocker right now. They really missed Lipschultz from last year. And so I think that Ohio State is that dark horse team because it's a veteran team. Steve Kehoe, a tremendous setter. They've got some good hitters. And they're going to be playing a West Coast team likely in the semis at a neutral site, and that'll give them a shot. The fact that they came out west and played so well against Pepperdine, who I think has a legitimate shot at getting to the NCAA semis, I call it the Volley Four, since right now we can't call it the Final Four. I think Ohio State will have a shot against that team in the semifinals.
Awesome. Mike, thank you so much for the information. We look forward to talking to you another week.
And Geeter, you're the best. We all know that.
Hey, Sonny, love you, buddy.
Take care.
All right.
Mike Sonheimer from UCLA, and now we want to bring in our other chorus.
Very knowledgeable, Sondi.
Very good. Very
by
good.
By the way, when you're doing play-by-play and Sondi is your stat guy.
Oh, he's hitting you with all kinds of stuff,
isn't
so he?
Much. But it's crazy. You're like, wow, where did you come up with that one from? Yeah, the last time they were on a 10-2 run was 1983 against Pepperdine in the Wooden Center.
I always love when the announcers are throwing that stuff out there because being here sitting in our show, we have to do that. I have to go back to the last 35 years of Super Bowls to pick out what somebody did on third down. Right
now.
In the fourth quarter. But for them, it's just somebody, here you go, here's a note.
And you just sound like a guy.
Oh, you sound so smart.
Oh, I love it when I have a good one.
All right, we have a couple other smart gentlemen joining us right now. Rob Aspero from UC Irvine and Jay Hosick from Penn State. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good evening, boys, or good morning.
Good afternoon. Aloha, gentlemen.
Jay, I'm going to start with you real quick. How do you get Barney and I on the Big Ten Network for your Ohio State game?
Amen.
I'm putting together pieces left and right just to get Barney out here for the February 4th tournament. I wanted you to come along, Geeta, but Furley, you can't make it.
I'll be emceeing at the Super Bowl. I know.
It's a slightly bigger gig. I'll give you a free pass this time.
Rob, I want to hit you with a question. UCSD takes out UC Irvine. Say it isn't so.
Oh, yeah, it was so. But you know what? It's not to take anything from UCSD. Coach Ring does a good job with what he's got down there. And, you know, it came down to the experience of Phil Bannon, their setter. He came on fire at the right time. And you know, when it came to team leadership, he was the guy. You know, he was setting the ball. He put balls away. And he found the right hitters at the right time. And the unsung hero of the Tritons, it has to be the libero, freshman. I mean, he dug so many balls that evening. I don't have the exact stat number, but he was definitely the key component to UCSD getting their spread out numbers between their pin attackers. You know, it's – you know, with all the balance of the talent in the MPSF, I mean, that first ball, that first pass, the run-in system is so important, and Frischman actually did that really well for the Tritons on Wednesday night. And it hurt me, but you know what? It was good volleyball. So, you know, take the good with the bad, right?
With that performance, UC San Diego pushed them up to 15, knocking Lewis out of the top 15, put themselves up from a previous 16th ranked spot. Now, Jay, I know you were in Hawaii this past week for a tournament out there. Give us the story.
Yes, we were in Hawaii. Our first match of the year was against UCLA on Thursday, and we came out strong and won the first game and then lost the next three sets. UCLA, you know, Sandy made a comment about their team, and, you know, I think the comment's pretty true, but there's a lot of good players on that team. Their middles, Amberg and Dunlap, are pretty solid, and they do a nice job. Scattereggio, their setter, does a nice job of mixing it around a little bit, and they got this kid from Argentina, Gonzago Quiroz, I think is his name, and kid's pretty crafty. So UCLA did a nice job. They won the tournament. And we got second place. But UCLA definitely good. We beat Hawaii the next night in five. And, you know, Hawaii just for some reason just didn't seem to be able to put it all together. They lost the night before against Ball State in three. And I think they came out and were a little bit shell-shocked. And they just couldn't quite get all the pieces running together. And then the next night they lost again to UCLA in three. And they just and to their credit, their big opposite, Jonas Umloft, was sick, and he wasn't doing too well, and just looked like they couldn't connect on their outsides too well. They, you know, just one thing led to another. Next thing you know, they're down 0-3 in the tournament and had a little bit of a rough one. But hats off to UCLA. Ball State did a nice job, you know, looked pretty strong this year. And, yeah, Joe Sunder had a big weekend. Kid was MVP of the tournament and played real well. So we're pretty happy for our first three matches of the year.
Hey, Jay, you know, when I look at your roster, you do have a couple kids from Cali, a couple kids from Newport Beach, Manhattan Beach, and Cardiff. How much do you keep your eye on what's going on at the juniors level in the West Coast?
Well, it's no secret that obviously the sheer amount of kids that play good volleyball around the West Coast doesn't mean that the East Coast doesn't have any. It just means that the depth is just a little bit more. But, you know, that being said, you know, Pav has done a nice job over the years. He gets, you know, for our take, the cream of the crop on the East Coast, at least as best as we can get to it. And then there's always a couple kids every year from the West Coast that express interest. And the real challenge for us is not necessarily whether or not the kids we think can make it here. It's whether or not the families want to have their kids, you know, a few thousand miles away. And if the kid's going to get homesick pretty easily, then it might not be the right fit for them. But we definitely keep our eyes out there. And me being from Southern California and knowing a lot of the club coaches and connecting with them, you know, we try to do our best to pick and choose the kids that we think are going to be successful here, and you know, we'll make a good fit to our program, and we'll be good students here in Penn State as well.
Robbie, USC, Bill Ferguson squad really seems to have it going on right now. They have all those guys returning from a couple years ago when they went to that national championship game. Are they a clear number one right now in your opinion, or is it still kind of jumbled up at the top?
Well, I think that with a 3-0 record, they have to be tabbed as a number one, or actually they're 2-0 right now. Murphy Troy has been just on fire. He hit for 474 for the week and had seven blocks against Long Beach State and Cal State Northridge. I mean, those are some excellent numbers for him. And Tony Chiarelli, who, you know, basically, I think it's going to come down to him. We know that Murphy Troy has the consistency, but can Tony deliver on his side of the court when he's at that pin? You know, they're just well coached. They're getting better each day, and you know, we'll see tomorrow night when they come to the Brent Center how Sparacha adjusts to that attack and what Fergie decides to do, because you know, they are playing extremely well right now. The Trojans, they're fired up for that match. You know, a video was leaked out on the web. Yeah, it's retribution night for USC, going back to the 2009 national championship match. So, you know, there's definitely a vibe that this is going to be a huge match tomorrow night. And, you know, it's USC. Everyone wants the gun for the cop, right?
Yeah. If our listeners want to get out there and see some of those matches, there's a couple of great ones going on at UCI this weekend. We have a link up on our Facebook page. Join our Facebook page. There's a link there that will get you a form that you can fill out for a ticket to get you into the Brent Center.
Jay, quickly, if you can, give us some players to watch, maybe your top five nationally.
Nationally, I think for sure Jonas Umloft from Hawaii is going to be a kid that's going to He's not going to necessarily be able to carry the whole team on his shoulders, but, man, can that kid bring some heat. I think Lawson, again, hands down, that kid is a beast, and he definitely handled us well last year, so I'm going to mention him. Carson Clark, UC Irvine, I think the kid's going to be a sole reason why they're going to be in the hunt for a Final Four. I think our kid Joe Sunder is going to be a kid that's going to be in the run, running for maybe a Player of the Year candidate type situation. And last but not least, let me think of one more. I'm going to go with Murphy Troy. I think Murphy's, I think he's just got a real good fundamental base to work with. The kid's on fire. He can definitely carry a team through a couple of low points here and there. So those are my five right there.
Robbie, I think that's a pretty good five. Anybody want to add to that?
You know, I'd have to give Brad Lawson a nod there, too, because the way he's come out this season after, you know, considering they had a national championship season, what he's done in the first week of the MPSF is just amazing against a quality team. So I'd have to put him in there.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for the information. You both are informative, and we like hearing about the men's game. Don't we, Peter?
No, I'm serious. I love it.
Gator, I'm going to give you a little plug. Again, CSUN beating Pepperdine this weekend in five.
Yeah, but isn't that amazing? Everyone forgot about that.
I didn't forget about it.
Number 12 CSUN
takes
number 3 Pepperdine.
Thank God, Jay. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome, boys. See y'all later.
All right, have a good one, guys.
Thank you, gentlemen. All right, the Net Live, the volleyballnetwork.com. That was the AVCA College Volleyball Weekly. CJ Roche spinning it. We're going to be right back here on the Net Live. We still have Jordan Larson coming up from the University of Nebraska and now Team USA. She's playing in Russia on the female side of Reed's team. Talk to her in just a moment. More to come. The Net Live. Right back. Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. DJ Roche. In house. He brought some gear, got himself back in the door.
It's good to see him.
I like it. Took my hat off that I had on, slapped the Vala hat right on. Virginia and LA. I like he's got both sides, the coast covered.
It's a good call by him.
Love it. They've been an interesting show so far. Just finished the College Volleyball Weekly with three great correspondents, lots of good information about the men's game. We had Todd Rogers, the professor, on here. Took him a while to get warmed up, but boy, he hit it at the end with a little professorial moment.
Preaching.
To the choir
and
here.
And teaching. And reaching and snapping.
And we have much more to come here on the show. I'm going to welcome in our next guest.
I like her. Huh. I watched her play.
I need to get a jersey. She's a three-time ABCA All-American
yes,
at college, including a national championship.
Yep.
She was Big 12 Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, and starred for Team USA this past season, starting at outside hitter opposite Logan Thom. Welcome into the show, Jordan Larson. Jordan.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, nice to have you here. Thanks very much for joining us. I want to start you off with, how much has your international experience with the USA team prepared you for playing overseas?
Oh, wow, you're starting off good so far.
Hey, we get right to
actually,
it.
What?
Go ahead.
It's helped a lot, actually. My first season was in Puerto Rico, and that was a good starting season for me. And then I decided to go train with the national team, and then I decided to go to a more difficult league, which was in Russia. And I felt like last year was really beneficial for me, and Russia was a great league to be in, and I became a smarter attacker and a better passer because of it, and yeah, it's definitely prepared me, you know, on the national team too. I mean, so.
Jordan, we spend time on this program talking about the different leagues, the different levels. What have you seen between Puerto Rico and Russia? What are the big differences?
Oh, man. Obviously, Russia has a taller block, and, you know, their main, you know, component here is attacking. I mean, that's really what they are really good at, and they, whereas in Puerto Rico, it's a smaller league, and, you know, they have, you know, decent players, and it's a decent league. It's not really, you know, one of the top leagues in the world, but I think it's a great, starting league for any players coming out of college that, you know, want to kind of experience it a little bit. It's not too far from the U.S., and it's still, you know, kind of similar to the U.S., whereas Russia is kind of a culture shock, too, in that sense. So, I don't know. I mean, there's not – I mean, they're very different. I can't really – I don't know.
Jordan, do you ever, go and visit Reed and see him in the corner just sipping on a 7-7 and just with no furniture?
Say that again? Sorry.
I said, do you ever just go over to Reed's house and see him in the corner sipping on a 7-7 with no furniture and all cold in his house?
Yeah, exactly. No, we've been over there a couple times, and it's been nice to have other Americans here, and that's really what makes the experience over here is, you know, getting to know them and, you know, what they've been through, and Russia's not an easy place to live, and, you know, I think having other people here has really helped me and to be a better player and be able to live in conditions like this. So.
Yeah, Jordan, Reed told us you need a little work on your backhand when it comes to Pong. True or false?
It's true. I'm not really good at the backhand, but I got the forehand, you know, the forehand. So hopefully, I don't know, I can get better at that. Maybe he can teach me something. I don't know.
You know, Jordan, you've had a lot of success with Team USA. What has the experience been like playing for Hugh and for Karch?
It was a new experience for me because, you know, in college I came from a very structured, type of coaching, and Hugh is very structured, but it's a different mentality. You know, we play more with the national team. There's not as much technical, you know, work where, and we also learned a lot of new techniques, you know, coming into the national team. I've really enjoyed, you know, playing under Hugh and Karch. I mean, Karch is just, he's full of knowledge, and I every time we're on a road trip, I just love, you know, asking him questions about his experiences and why, you know, he did certain things. And I think Hugh is such a smart coach, and I fully trust in what he's doing and the, you know, the techniques that he's teaching us. I've become a better player, you know, playing under him. And I look forward to, you know, many more years to come. So,
Jordan, tell us a little bit about the development of that team. There are so many women in the gym. What is it like on a day-to-day basis to be joined by so many great volleyball players from the United States?
It's a little intimidating at first, you know, when you, especially coming from college. I mean, it's very eye-opening, you know, playing next to Logan Tom and all these, you know, top athletes. But it's also a great, great experience that makes you better. You know, you get into the gym and you get to compete every day, and everyone is bringing their A game because they, you know, they want to, you know, represent USA and have USA on their back. So it's kind of, it's a cool feeling. And, you know, when you actually get to, you know, represent, it's, you know, you get chills listening to the national anthem. And I don't know, but it's such a cool feeling to be able to compete every day with such great athletes and getting to know them as people. You know, I think a lot of people forget that, you know, a lot of us competed in college against each other. And it's not that we hated each other, but it's, you know, it's a different mentality. And so getting to know them as a person and not just another player across the net, you know?
What player do you think is the most different from what you expected, having played against them in college and now being teammates with them on the national team?
Huh.
Good question.
Yeah, that is a good question. Sorry. I would probably say Destiny Hooker. I never really, like, talked to her all that much in college, you know, and it's been great getting to know her, you know, on the national team. I mean, she is a team player, and I feel like she, you know, she wants the team to win, and, you know, I feel, I don't know, she's a great player and a great athlete, and I've enjoyed getting to know her over this last year, so.
You mentioned the technical changes that Karch and Hugh have put into your game or asked you to do. Are there certain things or certain mantras from that team that you're working on or that you fall back on when you're playing overseas and things aren't going your way?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, and you have to kind of, you know, we have stuff written down that, you know, we need to try and work on over here to make it more of a habit, you know, and for me, I've played volleyball for, you know, 10 years, and you slip back into those habits, but you always have Hugh and Karch in the back of your mind, okay, you know, platform early, create an angle, you know, or quick last two steps. I mean, it just constantly has to go through your mind every day to keep you, you know, going and you know, to get it more of a habit, I guess. I don't know.
You know, Jordan, you played
it's
in front
not
of
easy.
Jordan, sorry, you played in front of some huge crowds and a great experience, I would imagine, at Nebraska. Talk about your time there and reflecting back what it meant to you to play Nebraska.
Oh, it's hard to, you know, put into a couple sentences because it was really living a dream for me. I grew up in Nebraska and always dreamed, you know, about playing volleyball and, you know, and actually getting to play for where I grew up was, it was such an honor, and I wore, you know, the Nebraska jersey proud, and it's so exciting to see how many people really truly love watching volleyball there, and I think the thing I miss most is, you know, the teammates that I played with and the relationships that I gained and you know, the ones that I still have now. And I don't know. It's such a hard, a great experience, but it's so hard to put into words of how amazing it was. And I wish every day that I could go back and start over again. You know, as a freshman, you're scared and nervous, and you know, by your senior year, you just want to live it all over again. And I just hope everyone that leaves there like has the same feeling I do. I hope everybody can see, you know, what it means to wear the Nebraska jersey. So.
You're listening to Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. We are talking to outside hitter for the United States and current Russian professional player Jordan Larson. Jordan, you know, I love your aggressive play. I've done a lot of your guys' matches over the last couple of seasons, and I wanted to know, have you ever seen a set that you wouldn't take a swing at? It's not really a serious question. I've seen you, and you've kind of separated yourself from the other group of ladies at that position in my mind, because when the ball's popped up in the middle of the court, you're not afraid to take an aggressive close step and take a swing at that ball. Is that something that you have found is different with you than some of the other women you've played with and against, both on the USA team and overseas?
I've learned, you know, to be aggressive, but also, you know, to be smart about it too. I mean, I learned the most under Hugh, like, you know, the chance of keeping it in and the percentages of actually getting it back, you know, rather than, you know, maybe being too aggressive and hitting the ball out and completely losing the point, you know. So I think I've actually toned it down a little bit in my aggression and just, you know, keeping the ball in. But I do, you know, I do like to take crazy swings, you know. Like, I think the favorite ball that most people think I'm crazy to swing at is the one that's, you know, if someone, you know, has a bad reception or something and, you know, it's behind my head and someone's setting it over my head, I love taking those swings and, you know, I don't know, just seeing kind of what happens. But I don't know if I would say different. I think, you know, a lot of people do that, maybe. I don't know. Do they?
I don't think a lot of people do, and I just wonder what I have to do to get a Jordan Larson jersey in an XL.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know where you could find one.
I'll have to make one at home. I'll get the USA jersey make-your-own kit. Hey, we've been talking a lot about the mental aspect of playing overseas and some of the challenges that you face, both yourself on the court, but also when you bring a significant other over there. You and your husband are both living in Russia. Talk about some of the things that you have had to face off with or deal with that have been unique.
Oh, man. This is my second year back in Russia, so it's actually been a lot easier this year, you know, because you kind of know what's going on and you have an idea, whereas last year, you know, our first year, we got off the plane, I think, at like 10 o'clock p.m. We walk into this apartment. We have no idea how outlets work. And I remember Luke's trying to fidget with an outlet, and the lights go out, and we have no electricity. And we still haven't showered. So we're sitting there showering with our, you know, the computer light. And I remember then getting in bed, and we're sitting on not even a mattress, like a box spring. And I just remember crying, like, what are we doing here? You know, what's going on? And, I mean, it's such a culture shock, and, you know, little things like going to the store, you know, it's hard because we didn't have a car last year. And, you know, you got to ask somebody to do that. And
Jordan, did you watch Rock in anticipation of going to live in Russia? Because when you end up on that box spring, that's time you pick up the log and you run up the hill in the snow.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to explain, you know, the little things that you take advantage of in America and that they don't have here. I'm trying to think of more reasons, but.
Well, certainly everyone should have the overseas experience and the opportunity to be the foreigner, in my mind. It certainly comes with a terrific bunch of challenges. Jordan, we thank you for joining us here on the show. We really appreciate you spending the time with us, and look forward to seeing you back on Team USA this next summer.
Okay, thanks for having me.
All right, terrific. Jordan Larson.
She's a hammer.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I love the way she swings the ball. She says, well, everybody doesn't do that. Or other people do that? No, they don't, actually. Most players, even on men's and women's side, are cautious about taking a big close step and hammering a ball.
I just loved how she cared about every single question. She'd be like, yes, I got to think about that one. She cared.
I wanted to approach the interview with the same aggression she does a high ball, you know, a good off swing. Just get in there and get it.
One thing you know, passionate still about Nebraska volleyball. I like that honesty.
I love that. That you love your university that much.
Yeah, she goes, I think about it every day.
You think that's the Olympics?
That's cool. That's a cool answer.
Dude, that's making the Olympics. If you're a kid, grows up in Nebraska, playing volleyball,
yep,
and you're seeing that program, because that Terry talked about the way he tried, yep, to spread out his program. It is an absolute icon in that entire state. And to grow up and end up on that team and starring on that team and having success winning a championship, boy, that's, where do you go from there? Team USA is a letdown.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. It's like, you know, you'll hear college football players say, I grew up, you know, going to Auburn games, or I grew up going to Alabama games. They lived there their whole life, and when they get to play in a big game, you know, think about that. For Nebraska, women's volleyball, she grew up, that was everything.
Yeah.
And she was a star.
Oh, yeah. That's the big stage right there.
So,
hey, I had a thought on the NCAA men, since we've covered that a bit here on the show. I was visiting the NCAA site.
Yes.
On the men's program. All right, they've got exactly 4 articles on the new season, 2 of which are game reports. The other 2 are preseason rankings and something else. I don't know what.
When was the last one written?
Oh, God.
December?
No, there's one in this month, like 4 days ago or something, but only one.
Yeah.
And the picture, when you load up that site, the homepage for men's volleyball, the picture is last year's championship and the article about the championship in May. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Hey, it's a small sport, okay? But if I go to the skiing site, they have updated information. They have updated articles.
How's that
skiing?
Possible?
Are you kidding me? And I discovered skiing has 6.3 scholarships per program.
Skiing?
Skiing.
Does? How many people on a team?
We've got 4.5. Well, they have downhill. They have cross country. They've got a bunch of different disciplines. But, hey, I'm all for more disciplines in volleyball if we can get some more scholarships, get something else going. It's ridiculous. I mean, skiing? Come on.
Is there, they've had championships. Now, do they put men's and women's together when you talk about skiing?
No, in men's skiing. 6.3 scholarships in men's skiing. And that it says that there are 14 Division I and 8 Division tools, or Division II
tools.
Division
tools. Tools out there. My bad.
Division II schools that are offering women's skiing scholarships. And there are 13 Division I and 7 Division II colleges that give the equivalent of 6.3 scholarships in men's skiing. Okay, so we're talking about a sport that's probably on par size-wise with volleyball.
Yep.
They've got updated information up there.
NCAA, we'd like a better homepage, bro.
Yeah. But just get somebody to write an article, a report about what happened.
You've got
to
have like one person designated to each sport, I would imagine. Or is there interns?
No, a half a person, maybe a quarter of a person.
Come on. It's not that tough.
You got a midget out there writing articles for volleyball.
Do we know anybody at the NCAA? Can we reach out? I think I've sent them an email and they haven't heard back.
I don't think we can reach out to anybody if I keep killing them here on the show.
Yeah, Reed, use your clout, get on that, and let's get someone from
the let's talk about Reed's clout, because
Reed has clout.
He's got a note on here about he's trying to big league the All-Star match. He wants to do the Jordan, not Jordan everybody, but, you know, he wants to not go to that weekend. He wants to stay home with the family and things, and he's having some trouble. I don't think he has enough clout. It seems like Ball and outside hitter Sergei Tatukin, Russian star, are able to say no, but Reed pretty seems like he has to go, so... You know, welcome to our life, Reed. You're no longer the BMOC.
Yeah, I was. We've traveled so much, Barney, and we've just been.
Anything to file in? File in.
You know, you and I have talked off air. I've really struggled the last 2 months. I mean, it's been equal to a baseball slump. You know, where you're just like, I feel like when I was in this slump, I was like in pepper, like trying to concentrate on making contact with the ball. And, you know, it's just been a lot of travel, and we've been all over the place. And so we've been back home, and I've been feeling great lately. And this is like we have 2 options is what I was told to go to this All-Star match. One is they're going to get a charter for the team, and that's going to take 9 hours. And the other option is to go through Moscow. It's going to take like 24 hours. So,
no train?
I mean, they put it so far away. And on top of it, because I haven't had that great of a first half, the fans didn't even vote me in like the top 4 of the outside hitters on my particular team. So the way I saw it was the fans aren't going to miss me, you know, nobody's going to miss me. So I just wanted to stay home. And I was called by a translator today saying that the president of the league called and said that I'd be fined and suspended for 2 games if I don't go. So I don't have clout, but Loy is staying home and Tatukin. I think they're going to be having dinner together at the ski resort here in town.
See, I back Reed on this one. I don't think he should have to go. He shouldn't have to go. He wasn't voted in.
Hey, go
for the fans.
Go and win a car again. Did he win a car, an MVP or something at one point?
Yeah, that wasn't the All-Star game, though.
Oh.
Been there, done that. Phil Jackson hates All-Star games.
He hates Christmas Day games, too.
The guy's been a part of 27 Christmas Day games. I mean, at some point, you know, Reed gives a lot to this sport. He plays a lot. What's wrong with a weekend with your family?
I've got Phil's solution. Just stink, all right? You don't see the coach of the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, there's a flip side. Obviously, there's
playing
a flip
on Christmas
side.
Day.
There's a flip side to it. I mean, there's a, hey, you're good enough, you should feel honored to be included.
When was the last time the Clippers played on Christmas Day?
I'm going to say never.
Just stink. Reed, be worse. You won't have to go to the All-Star game.
Well, I'm going whether I like it or not. It'll be good, though. Clay will be there. Kevin Hansen will be there. It'll be good to reconnect with those guys. Dave Lee.
Sure. Now that makes more sense now. You got your boys there. It's good. Hold on. What would the fine be, Reed?
That's a good question. Undisclosed.
Hobbling.
You could be like you could be like Derek Coleman when he played for the New Jersey Nets and walked into Calipari at the beginning of the year and just gave him just a blank check and said, "Fine me whatever, because I'm going to be late every time."
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Reed, we want to get back to your Nitties picks.
Oh, we need to do it just so we stop talking about it, right?
Throw it out there.
All right, let me pull it up here. I'll just go really fast. What was the first category? Most influential volleyball event. I chose the AVP closing its doors during the Long Beach report leak. It seemed like that was the turning point when that article came out. You guys remember that? We were doing a photo shoot that Dan loved.
Yep.
At the Long Beach venue, and some report leaked in the newspaper, and it seemed to really shake it all up. And from that point forward, they couldn't close any deals.
Okay.
Player of the Year,
Reed Pretty.
Phil Dahlhauser. I had to go with Geeter on that one.
No, cool.
You know, somebody from a women's team could have done it. Loy Ball, Clay Stanley, maybe winning another title here in Russia last year, which was 2010. Trento winning Champions League twice in a row was big. And Murillo played huge in the World Championships. But I went with Phil Dahlhauser. Headline of the Year, this was a no-brainer. We had AVP closing its doors as one of them, but Geeter joining the Net Live as a mainstay, that was the headline of the year for me.
Thank you, Reed,
obviously.
And let's see, issue that will be influential in 2011. I think the PBVA will be huge. If that could go through and there's actually a single voice that people can actually deal with the players, that'd be huge. I think also web streaming initiative. I think that's the answer for our sport.
I think it would be huge, the PBVA coming on board and actually being a players' organization. I'm going to go on record right now as saying it's not going to happen and that those guys are not going to be able to pull themselves together in any sort of meaningful way that's going to be long-lasting. I just see too many divergent needs from the players from top to bottom.
Yeah, I would agree. I hope you're wrong. But I think also web streaming, I think, really is the answer to get our sport out there into the hands of the people who want it. Biggest disappointment, I had to choose from three. The AVP Tour, of course, the U.S. men's team because I'm on it, and I was really disappointed. But I chose Brazil throwing the match at the World Championships.
Ooh, good one.
Yep.
Biggest disappointment of 2010, disappointment. I just thought that was it just made the tournament so weird.
They threw it so poorly?
Just the fact that they threw it. It was almost just like they were acting out like they were two-year-olds and they didn't like the format. And you know, there was a time, and I'll say it on air. I mean, I know I'm a team captain of the U.S. team, and I need to be careful of what I say and who I represent. Right now, this is just my opinion. I used to respect Brazil a lot, and I really loved the way they played. But their behavior in the last couple of years, both on the men's and women's side, has just been, you know, they've made it hard to root for them, you know, as a fan. And I just thought that them throwing that match, I really was rooting for Czech. I mean, Czech was so close. If Storker had a medium match, they're opposite, just a medium match. He played great in every other match. If he had a medium match, they would have won 3-1. But he had a pretty poor match. It was pretty. That's what happens when you get 300 swings. But person of the year, I had to go with Russ Rose, second year in a row. When you're winning four consecutive NCAA titles, you get voted again as a person of the year. And it's too bad that the UConn women get all this pub all over the UConn basketball team, gets all this pub, you know, nationally, but the and complain about it, no less. And Penn State doesn't get much love nationally. I think that's a shame.
I've got a message for Gino Auriemma. I've met Russ Rose, and you, sir, are no Russ Rose.
Concur.
It's ridiculous. The way they blow it up, it's just based off of a number from the 70s in a comparable sport. It really has nothing to do with the actual record. And people don't know that there are records out there that are far greater than UConn's streak of wins. As impressive as that is, it's just not as good as Penn State.
Well, Penn State's 120.
I like that about sports. I like that about sports, that it's definitive. Here it is. It's either this number or it's not that number. And I miss that in some of my dealings with other people and other businesses and ventures I've had where it's all gray. There's no black. I mean, there's a lot of gray in evaluating players and teams and results. But at some point, those results are in black. It's like, well, I don't like the Lakers. I don't like the Bulls. I don't like Penn State. Well, fact is, they have all the wins. So you can always do that, always scoreboard them. It's not always present in a lot of other ways in life.
You know what? The fans get involved in 2011. Email the show. Get on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Keeter3. We got the Net Live on Twitter. Reed's on Twitter. Jay Roche's on there. Get on there. Get us some guests that you want to hear. I mean, because we have absolutely been lighting it up with guests in 2011. I'd love to know what our fans and who they'd want to see.
TheNetLive@gmail.com
Yes,
is the address. You can hit that, and we will certainly read it. We're still going to do whatever we want, but we will certainly read it. I think it's important, too, to thank people that really helped us have a lot of success in 2010. There's a variety of people that have been a critical part to this show and its development back a couple of years ago. Dan Aranda at volleyball.com comes to mind. He's hosts our audio files. Lindsey Breeden for early tech support. Dan Madden, who was here for a long time and now works for Lindsey Breeden. Josh Glazebrook, who's helped us with some web stuff and photo shoots and made us look good.
He's good.
That's a challenge. I think Geeter.
Oh. Thank you.
Because he's gonna be in the intro eventually.
One day. Get on that, J-Ro.
But even a nice addition, J-Ro being here. He's a 2011 thank you. We're just getting him a little bit early. Brandon Rosenthal, who's come in. I think Alex Kelly, who was here for our whole summer and did a lot of stuff for us, which is a lot of fun. Holly McPeak, Dave Reed, who were great during the College Volleyball Weekly this past season. Jay Hosick, Eric Sullivan, because these guys are still every show calling in for one reason or another. Sullivan, we're still waiting for you to co-opt the entire Nebraska nation onto this show. We should have 20,000
three
listeners.
Extra Nebraska fans. How about tap into that 18,000 that go to the games, guy?
Matt Gardhoff for all the doll work and other fun stuff that he's doing, promoing the show. Hope you survive CrossFit. And all the great guests. I mean, thanks to everybody who was willing to come on to the show. We've hardly had anyone ever say no to come on this program. I don't know that we've had anyone say no. And that goes all the way down to Nick Lewin. Thanks for coming on.
And we're going to have him again. And some people, someone had a good point. Can we get Cook and Jimmy Mack on at the same time? That's when we would really hit it out of the park. Reed?
Efforting. I got a new...
There's no way. Who would say yes there? You think Cooker? Jimmy Mack, maybe? No.
I don't. We had Jimmy Mack on. He was great.
Jimmy Mack on for sure. And I think,
he was good.
But I'm saying, would you have him on at the same time? Oh, Jimmy Mack was fantastic in August. Would you get him on at the same time? Would be unreal.
I want to say thanks to all the fans out there who've been on our Facebook page, sending us email, powering the show and some topics, and giving us feedback on what's happening, good, bad, and indifferent. Even the trolls. Thanks to the trolls for listening out there.
And Volley Talk, I think you're Sully.
Exactly. And special thanks to all of our sponsors and people that we've co-opted information with here, the AVCA for getting behind us, USA Volleyball, the AVP when it was around. Also, special thanks to the USYVL. And we hear their advertisement. They're an organization that's doing some fun stuff for kids and just really good stuff, and we look forward to developing more of that in 2011. DJ Roche is the first edition of 2011 here.
I thought it sounded like our last show ever.
That's right. just farewell.
Just the beginning of the year.
So, Reed, did I leave anyone out?
I think that's good. Good stuff. Big thanks. Thanks to Kevin Barnett for being here every single week, too.
Never missed a week. He's the only guy. The streak is going. Lou Gehrig.
Hey.
Cal Ripken.
Broken collarbone.
Brett Favre.
Kansas City death flu. Nothing stops me.
Derek Fisher. And Kevin Barnett.
My kids might stop me. Man.
Special thanks to your wife, too, for working. So you could be home for the show.
I've been coming here for years. She's been to one show.
We don't
let
her.
You live alone?
We don't let her off that.
She's Kevin and a cat.
This has to work. The wife's just a dream.
Net Live going viral in 2011, I'm telling you.
Hey, email us, Facebook us, do it all. Keep enjoying the program. Give us your feedback, good, bad, indifferent. We love it. DJ Roche, try and play us off the air here. We are out. We'll be back on Monday next week.
Love us or hate us, I ain't going nowhere.
Monday morning, we're efforting on a few different things. Men's coaches. Talk to some other important people here in the world of volleyball. For Geeter and Reed and DJ Roche, I'm Kevin. We'll see you again next week.